Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is a special edition of Franchise Today, and it's also part of the current series, Voices of Franchising. Today, my special guest is Nick Powell, CEO and Chief Brand Strategist of No Limit Agency and founder of the 1851 Franchise Project, and we'll be talking about that here momentarily. I want to remind everybody of the upcoming segments of Franchise Today. As I said, we are in the series Voices of Franchising, and that continues this Thursday with my guest Steve Caldera, President and CEO at the International Franchise Association, just days before the IFA convention next week in Las Vegas. And then next Thursday, right after the IFA convention, Nancy Weingartner, Executive Editor of Franchise Times, will be my guest. And the following week, as we wrap up Voices of Franchising, Therese Dilgen of Franchise Update Group, a media group, will be my guest. So it's really a packed month for Franchise Today in our Voices of Franchising series. And looking ahead in March, we'll do a two-part series on franchise finance and followed up by a two-part series that will also coincide with the Multi-Unit Franchising Conference in Las Vegas, which will be on multi-unit franchising. Then in April and May, I'm real excited as we're lining up and getting confirmation of guests for our fourth annual franchise legal series. This year expanded to 8 segments, culminating with a recap of the IFA Legal Symposium in Washington, D.C. towards the end of May. So that's 8 segments in our fourth series. Just really unbelievable where we've come from, you know, just 4 years ago, and bringing on a couple of attorneys to talk about best practices and legal issues surrounding franchising to where it is today. Then in June, we'll be doing a two-part series on the technology and franchising, followed up with a couple of segments on franchise development as we lead into the summer. Again, as I mentioned before, typically we've been on hiatus during the summer, but this year we're going to do live shows throughout the summer. It'll be our Franchisor Spotlight Series. We're already receiving commitments, and one of the biggest commitments I'm excited about getting right off the bat was Dina Dwyer-Owens of the Dwyer Group on Thursday, July 11th. Then in September, we will be focusing our attention on the Public Affairs and Leadership Conference by the IFA in Washington, D.C., so all that month we'll be talking about political issues as well as some leadership shows on leadership, which I really think is a great segue into the Franchise Update Leadership and Development Conference in Atlanta the following month and also the West Coast Franchise Expo, so we'll be talking a lot of franchise development as well. And then in December, we'll be wrapping up with a year-in-review. Again, it'll be live shows, so it's really great, and I'm excited that since the merger with Franchise Essentials and Franchise Foundry, that Franchise Today is now a production of Franchise Foundry, and really exciting things going on there. Also, in the very near future, we'll be putting out some information on our third annual Franchise Social Media Summit, and that'll be done in conjunction with Fran Summit and our co-founder and partner on that, Elements Local. And I'm real excited, of course, at our continuing partnership with Fishman PR and Marketing, our strategic partner on Franchise Today and Fran Summit. And as I mentioned, we're doing 50 live shows this year on Franchise Today, and then in addition to that, 6 to 8 special editions. And today is one of those special editions, as we had some scheduling problems. Nick Powell was supposed to be my guest last Thursday. I really wanted to get him on the show because 1851 Magazine, their magazine is scheduled to go to print for its first print issue in conjunction with the IFA, and I really am excited to have Nick here today ahead of the IFA, and I know he's got a lot of preparation heading into it. So, Nick, I mean, welcome to Franchise Today.
Yeah, thanks for the invite, Paul.
You know, as I said, Nick, you know, we got less than a week to go to the IFA. We always look forward to this event, but I know it's even more special for you with the the print issue of 1851 magazine. And talking about 1851 magazine, you launched that several months ago, digital publication, really a wow factor, at least in my opinion, in such a short period of time. It's nice to see such fresh and vibrant information in a tone and a sentiment that, to me, resonates with the younger generation coming into franchising, both from a corporate standpoint, brand standpoint, as well as from the standpoint of franchise candidates. I really think it's a great addition. And, you know, also you have some changes going on at No Limit Media Consulting, now No Limit Agency. So I want to talk about that, but specifically starting off with, and I took this from, I believe it was your website, you know, getting people talking about brands, brands, and brands. And I think that really is the evolvement of everything that we've known in, you know, marketing and PR and even the early stages of social media, you know, getting people talking about brands, brands, brands. And I really think that's just a tremendous statement, a very succinct statement that really says it all. So let's start real quick. No Limit Media Consulting, No Limit Agency. Why the change? Why the evolvement?
Well, I'll say going into the planning stages, it was a much larger undertaking than I could have ever imagined. So changing a name is not the easiest thing in the world. But really, I mean, our focus on the media consulting side was if we could bridge the relationship between publicists and journalists, we would be able to develop stronger relationships. Our process is different than any other PR agency, which is great on the results side. It's challenging on the recruiting side because it is high stress environment on our team internally, because there's a lot of rejection when you're calling media and developing relationships as opposed to blasting on press releases. But the media consulting part served its purpose, and reporters realized that we were here to be their partner in developing stories, not give them dumb stories. Client gave $500 to charity. Those things don't sell. It doesn't excite the journalist. It pretty much destroys relationships. So we focused on relationship, built the consulting, and it worked. But just like anything else in franchising, change has to be acceptable for any organization. And we looked at our model and said we're not just PR. We were never just PR, and that was probably a fault of the structure of our organization. In order to evolve and be competitive with the biggest PR firms in the world, we knew that media consulting had to go by the wayside, and we had to become agency. So when we look at growing our agency, there's a lot of opportunity both within and outside of franchising, and applying some of the communications styles that we learned from the media consulting side. So agency is a bigger term. It provides a little bit more flexibility in communication umbrellas, and it should allow us to create stronger campaigns that have a beginning and a middle but never an end for any of the clients that we work on moving forward.
You know, the thing I really found unique and very innovative and certainly very thoughtful was using the term No Limit, even when you're media consulting and now agency. What was the thought behind naming your company No Limit?
So I think everybody has a moment in their career where they decide, I'm ready for that next step. And I had that in my previous agency, where I started measuring what were the reasons why I would want to stay long term, and what would be the reasons I would want to go and not be a part of this long term. Ultimately, I wanted to create something that wasn't mine. If you look at the agency landscape, and both within and outside of franchising, most agencies take on the name of their founder, but long term that eliminates a lot of potential for where an agency can go. So No Limit on the foundation was built so that over time the energy and the partners that would be evolving within the system would extend outside of me. I don't want this to be Nick's PR agency. It was never about that. It's about producing better results, service, and relationships to our clients. And that can't be done with just Powell's PR. It would never work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then secondly, I can say from a service standpoint, it's tough to find a service provider that will go above and beyond. And above and beyond sounds too cliche, so no mm-hmm. limit made sense. And lastly, which this was originally part of the plan, it was going to be no limit public relations because my initials are NLP. So had to find something to create some kind of name that wasn't Powell's. So it's allowed a lot of flexibility for our staff as well as for our clients.
And I really think the no limit, I think, was really a neat cornerstone to the evolvement from no limit media consulting to no limit agency, because it really, in my mind, when I saw this, it was the perfect extension of the thought behind there being no limit. We're going to keep evolving. We're going to keep changing. And I really admire that fact. Also, coming from a lot of thought about branding that you and I both have, I thought that was probably kept you up along with a new baby. Congratulations again on that. But along with, you know, keeping you up at night, do I change the branding here? Is it the right message? And I think it was. I think kudos to you on that. You know, Franchise Essentials, my company, as I said, recently merged with Franchise Foundry. You know, one of the taglines we used was sky's the limit in franchise marketing and development. And when I saw no limit, I thought, damn, that is so good, because the sky's limit shows that there is a limit. You're showing that there's no limit. And enough on that, because I certainly don't want to just keep flattering you on this, but I am in admiration of the name and the changes that you made, and I think they're great.
Well, since the first time that I met you, Paul, I think our mindsets have been pretty aligned in what the potential is for any franchise brand. So while our name may be no limit, I completely believe that you can provide those same services and thought process to the clients that you guys provide to.
I appreciate that. And, you know, I come at this, and I've often said that even when I was doing a lot of work on the marketing side, that my entire focus was always coming at it from the franchising side. And that left a little bit to be desired, because I was operating within, you know, certain silos, strictly coming at it from my expertise and background on the franchising side. And I think what, you know, I'm looking at your website right now, and I see, you know, specific different things. You know, I see PR, I see social media, I see marketing, I see crisis communications, I see a tab up at the top, brand marketing. And I think this is just proof in the pudding that, and I know a lot of the CPAs out there are going to hate this, that these are no longer line item functions in a franchise organization, and probably any type of organization, where, you know, people looked at it and said, well, if I'm going to spend X amount of dollars on advertising, I want to know specifically what my return is. And in today's day and age, with all of this touching on not only consumer proposition, but, you know, for franchise candidate lead generation, but also how it relates to customer service and the customer experience and operations and training and communications throughout the organization and beyond the organization. I mean, it really is something that has evolved, again, using that word evolved, into something that's all-encompassing. And to me, franchise organizations haven't already latched onto it, but at least planning on latching onto it. In my estimation, they're going to be left in the dust. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, here's a reality. If you take 99% of franchise brands that exist, and you look at their communications, and let's put it in simplistic terms, you got PR, you got social, you got marketing, and you got advertising, where those are going to be your main channels for outbound communications. And you can find ways to fit pretty much anything under each of those umbrellas. But 99% of brands point them up in the same direction, but rarely identify the target that they want to hit. So when you silo your communications into those four umbrellas, you're spending money in each area, but maybe just barely grazing that pinpoint that you're going after. So what I'm seeing is smarter brands are finding ways to evolve the way that they communicate, and those are the ones that are going to thrive. So if you have a new product that's launching and you build a social campaign around it to crowdsource to let your fans name that product, and now you direct your marketing to talk about naming the product and the fact that you're growing throughout the United States, and then your advertising ties that up in a nice little bow and distributes it out there. Now PR is talking about it, social is the top of the umbrella, marketing and advertising are working together in that form. In those scenarios, that's where you get the strongest ROI. The reality is I think a lot of franchise development folks love the heyday of the portals. They worked fantastic. I could put my feet up on the desk and watch leads come in. And there's still leads that trickle in, but the reality is not one thing works. And if you're going to hire a PR firm or a social media agency or a development team, unless you have the other parts, you're going to fall flat on your face. So the best way to be successful, especially in this economy that has shifted everything, is to change the way you look at it, the way you communicate, and bridge those silos so that they all point together in a funnel. That's going to prevent you from becoming complacent. That's going to allow you to continue to thrive as an organization.
I love one of the taglines on your, or one of the statements in your website under our process when you talk about, you know, we educate, engage, and sustain through all media channels possible. You know, one of the things that I talk about from a practical or actually from a tactical sense is, you know, share information, interact, engage, and only then we have a earn the right for a call to action. And I love seeing the word educate in here because I really believe that is something that's missing. Too many times a brand and individuals want to put up the sign, I'm selling this, I'm doing that, without sharing information and educating whoever they need to along the way, whether it be pitching to a franchise founder or a CEO or pitching to a consumer or to a franchise candidate. And you talk about this all being a campaign. And campaigns, in my mind, lend more towards a long-term investment, a long-term relationship. And so with that in mind, is that what you see this as? Is that the reason why you're using the words campaigns? And is that the process that No Limit follows?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's not – You can fire up as many darts at a dartboard as you want and hope something sticks, but that's not a cohesive approach. It's not a campaign. You're not campaigning to hit a bullseye. When I look at the way communication should be, it should be a beginning and a middle, and then how do we continue and make it another beginning? And that's a campaign. Campaigns are constant relationships. You look at a presidential election. When a president is elected, he doesn't just stop at 4 years. He's been campaigning the entire time to get another 4 years, and then he's campaigning to get a book deal and a nice presidential library and everything else that happens. The campaign continues on and on and on. A good campaign does. So if you want to build a successful communications umbrella for your organization, you can't just do one-off projects. You can't just bank on one moment making you all the money in the world. It's got to be a cohesive approach that campaigns towards a collective finish point, not a finish line. It's cliche, but everything in development is not about a sprint. It's a marathon, and probably the marathon continues going and going and going. And that's the way you got to look at it. And I know everyone wants the get-rich-quick scheme or some magical tool that you wave your wand and I sold 50 franchises. It doesn't work anymore. Even if you have the hottest concept in the world, you're not going to be able to wave that magic wand and make something happen. You have to have multiple moving pieces in order to be successful.
Yeah, I think a lot of times they look at that magic wand, or as I refer to it, as that silver bullet. Because they think it's easier, it's less work, let's just jump at it, fire it, wave the wand, and our problems will be resolved. And the ones that have really taken to the philosophy that it is truly a marathon, along the likes of, you know, Steve Greenbaum at Postnet, and as he discussed as we opened the year in our marketing series, it's a long haul. It's a long haul, and what I really admire a lot about founders and C-level executives like Steve Greenbaum, and what really impressed me was there is no start and finish for him. It's start and keep going and then keep going and keep going. And he was the one, you know, he's in the first row at the leadership conference in Atlanta taking notes. And you look back and you say, how can anybody be more successful in franchising than him? Certainly he's in the top 1%. And yet, looking for new things, looking to keep that momentum going and keeping, as you said, the campaign going, looking for the next part that's going to bring multiple benefits throughout the organization. And I really think that lends towards everything that we're talking about. You know, social media, you know, everybody looked at as that magic wand 4 or 5 years ago. And it was interesting spending some time looking back at my blog, which was my company blog and is now my personal blog, Franchise Essentials. And I look back at some of the things that were written 5 years ago when I really started talking about social media and introducing it to franchising. Again, from the franchising perspective, not the marketing perspective. And I look at some of the comments that came back and how rudimentary, how fundamental they were, but also fundamentally unsound at the time as to why they wanted to use social media. Again, that magic wand, that silver bullet. And I remember a conversation with somebody that said, I want to use social media to sell franchises. And I said, how many would you like to sell? And he said, 50. And I said, okay, how many did you sell last year? And he said, 2. And I said, how many leads did you generate to sell 2? And, of course, as we know, franchisors are usually very proud of their lead count. Oh, we get thousands. I said, so can we say 1,000 to sell 2? He said, oh, yeah, 1,000. I said, let's do the math here in order to sell 50. And look at 1,000 and start running the numbers. And you really think social media is going to generate 25,000 to 50,000 specific leads inquiring about your franchise opportunity? Let's get back to reality. Where have you seen, and specifically to the franchise space, where have you seen social media evolve? And where do you think, and I know you don't have the magic wand, but where do you think it's heading?
Yeah, so Let me look back at 5 years, too, because our company will be 5 years old as of March 3rd. So,
congratulations.
It's been right along the side with you, too. If I look back 5 years ago, it was really the foundation of what I thought was opportunity in social. It was a place to influence the due diligence of those who are searching for a brand. So Stan Friedman was at a company, and he said, I want to be in Wall Street Journal and Inc. Magazine and Fox Business at the end of this year. Those are three target publications that I would like. And I said, okay, Stan, how do you expect to do this? You have zero locations. He said, you're the publicist. You go figure it out. And I think back to that moment, and it was really an interesting play because at that point I had pitched that social media is going to be the next big thing. And, of course, everyone laughed at it and said, no, this is a fad. Well, of course, now 5 years later, it's a very, very big industry. But looking back at that, what we did is we blogged for Stan. We created a steady information distribution center. We had a MySpace profile, which obviously is obsolete now. And we had a Facebook group, which is no longer used. But Blogger plus Facebook plus MySpace at the point was designed to build a foundation for those who perform due diligence. The reality of anyone who's going to buy any product today, they're going to go to Google, they're going to search for your brand, and they're going to see what appears on that first page. Understand that social media is a giant influencer because of the amount of traffic, the natural SEO behind it will elevate it to the top. So what happened is as I would pitch reporters, they would find and identify that Stan was writing a pretty cool blog. So over the course of that year, we booked Wall Street Journal and Inc. and then ended up at the end of the year with him on Fox Business. And we accomplished that goal not because of the constant educating just through the phone, but also the educating through the due diligence process. So going back to day one when I started this company, I said, don't look at social media to be this magic tool. It is another place to bridge the relationship. So today, 5 years later, it's the same philosophy. And I'll say it's beautiful because it took about a year and a half from the point that we started for another agency to even pop up in the social space. So our intelligence has, I've always felt, has been about a year and a half, maybe a year advance of those who are trying to compete in the social space. But it's all about building a relationship and building a foundation for that due diligence. So your customers, if you ask any brand, how many of our franchisees had some relationship with the product or the experience beforehand, most franchisees are going to say, I had an experience. I was a customer. Now, knowing that, if you put the super customers into a Facebook fan page, you can influence them. There is a power of that impression, but it's even more powerful that your franchise prospects are going to land on that Facebook page and see, I love this brand, I love working here, I love being a part of it, and see you as an innovative company. That's where it's a part of the process. There will never be, and I shouldn't use the term never, and I talk about this with 1851, but I don't think there's ever going to be another silver bullets that will do what the franchise portals did when they were working great. I could be wrong, but I still think a fundamental process that includes bits and pieces of every category is what's going to work. So is social media driving sales? No. And frankly, neither is PR, neither is advertising, neither is marketing. What drives sales is the sales process that a franchisor has in place and the people that are selling throughout that process. I can get you all the leads in the world. You get 100,000 leads, great, or the client that you're talking about that gets 2,000, awesome, but you've awarded two. That means something didn't work, whether it was financing or they didn't line up from a relationship standpoint. Something didn't work. Social will not sell you a franchise. You will. It's about people selling people. That's all this is. It's a people relationship business. You're encouraging someone to invest their life savings into your company. You're not going to just sell them off of social media. You might be introduced to, but you're not going to go be able to say, I sold 20 deals off of social media. It doesn't exist. There's other pieces to that puzzle.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I often say in that scenario of two sales out of 1,000 was probably the two sales that dropped in your lap, because your sales process probably eliminated the ones that you probably should have sold. And I definitely believe that franchisors have to spend ample time in developing the process, but not just developing it, fine-tuning it, follow up on it, you know, hold people accountable, hold the system accountable every step of the way. And too often than not, it's just easy to look for that silver bullet that will drive any type of, you know, proposition, whether it be consumer or franchise lead generation. We're on a special edition of Franchise Today. My special guest is Nick Powell, CEO of No Limit Agency and founder of 1851 Project, which now is becoming a print magazine. Just want to finalize some thoughts on the social media aspect, Nick. Where do you see social media going? We know by now it's not a fad, even though there are still some naysayers out there. But before I get to that, I did want to bring up one more point, because you mentioned about starting a relationship with individuals, getting them exposed to the franchise concept, and social media is just another way of delivering that information and creating that relationship with people, whether they decide to buy the franchise or to do business with a certain business, and franchising, obviously, the franchisee locations. And just recently in LinkedIn, somebody had put up a statement, a response to a question, and I think it had to do with social media being a silver bullet, or actually, it was a discussion that I started and said, trying to draw out the people that thinking it was a silver bullet, and obviously it's not. And this one person had indicated, social media, franchisors have no right putting any type of franchise development messaging in social media. That should be a totally different function. And I kind of draw them back to back in the day when Subway, the largest franchise today, started their franchise development efforts. And I remember on the cup and on the napkin was, for franchise information, call 1-800-SUBWAY or whatever it was. And, to me, social media is not anything different than that. People coming in, the experience, a positive experience, they're interested in it. As you said, they have an experience with the brand and the business, and then they explore for more information. And just like those napkins and cups were collateral material, obviously not of the same value as social media is, but to me it gives, you know, the franchise candidate today the opportunity to virtually stand next to a brand and see how they deal with relationships, how they develop relationships, how they strengthen relationships. They can virtually stand next to the brand and see how they interact with customers, how they're interacting with franchisees, the type of information they're sharing to go along with the philosophy of share, interact, and engage in conversations. So I really believe, you know, what you're saying is spot on. As you said, we have a lot of the same thoughts. We're aligned a lot in that entire thought process and how it relates to franchising. But I think the one thing that I want to ask you, and it's kind of an off-the-cuff question, but as we know, a lot of suppliers that and service providers that look at franchising as a great way to develop their business or to further develop their business, a lot of people in the franchise community kind of keep them at arm's length. And for several years, if not more, before they finally have, quote-unquote, earned the right. And a lot of people look at it and they say they don't understand franchising. And I'm sure that might have been some of the thought process when you started. And obviously, listening to you today, and you're talking about franchise sales processes, and you're talking about you commonly refer back to the franchise system. What do you say to the people that might have said about you at the early stages, and maybe, and I'm not saying this is the case, but maybe have the same thought process that you don't have enough experience in franchising? What do you say to those naysayers at this point?
Well, I mean, I understand it. Listen, franchising is a good old boy network. No matter how you twist it, there's a political aspect to the community. The more political you are, the better opportunity you're going to have. If I were a new supplier trying to break into this, I would be completely frightened. You walk into this room, maybe you exhibit at IFA, but you have so many people that are only pushing their favorite suppliers all of the time. I don't think that's the best way to do business. I think the best community would be one where, okay, here are the agencies that rep this, here are the development people who rep this, here are the marketing people who rep this, and figure out who fits best for the business. It still is about relationship, and I completely understand that. But those who don't have franchise experience are going to have a really tough time breaking into this industry because of the foundation that's already built. It amazes me that really there are four core PR firms in franchising, and you have a few little small ones that are trying to tip in, and some may be successful. So let's say 5 years from now there's six PR firms for 4,000 supposed franchisors. That's not enough. So the reason that has never changed is because of the politicalness that exists. There should be more. Every franchisor should have access to the best practice knowledge that exists. So if I'm a new supplier, I'm scared. I'm nervous going into this field because it is such a tight network that it's tough to break in, and it's tough to start getting referrals because of that old boy network that exists within franchising.
Yeah, absolutely so. So we're 5 days, 12 hours, and 8 minutes away to the print issue of 1851. Tell us a little bit about your vision with 1851, and let's start off specifically with what does 1851 mean, because I really found that a very interesting bit of information. So why don't you share that with our listening audience?
Yeah, so 1851, and everyone has different stories, so there's going to be arguments on every side. Some suggest that McDonald's was the first franchise, but every bit of information that I have found through extensive research points to Singer Sewing Machines as being the first franchise in 1851. So in order to be first in what I feel is the first of strong digital publications, I really don't think a a digital publication exists in franchising today other than 1851. There hasn't been anyone else who's created this place that should speak to Zors and Zs and suppliers. So to be first, we knew that we had to have a name that identified it as first. So 1851 is the foundation of Singer Sewing Machines when they first franchised their door-to-door business. And then, so on to some of the changes that have happened and the direction went. I'll say when in May 18th, we were at the Fran Connect Conference, and that was the first day of 1851 being in existence as a digital publication. And at that point, I said there's no need for a print publication because we can accomplish everything digitally. To my surprise, we had 5,000 readers in the first month, all organically. And even more surprisingly, about 1,200 of those came off of Facebook. So talk about lead generation as a tool. Facebook was actually working to drive readers in there. So my biggest thing with No Limit or Life, period, is those who become complacent are the companies that are not great. They're the good companies, and there's plenty of them. Those who become great have to be willing to change and not become complacent. So as the magazine started growing in popularity as a digital form, I looked at the space and I said, listen, there's nothing out there that is, in essence, taken those four pages that Entrepreneur Magazine dedicates to franchising and has expanded it into a full magazine. Entrepreneur has a tiny little section on franchising, and everyone can point to Entrepreneur as this, as close to a silver bullet as exists, that you get a good third-party credible story in Entrepreneur, it's going to drive significant lead traffic to you, and you're going to have the opportunity to sell. So the idea is if we could take those 3 to 5 pages that Entrepreneur dedicates, take that same style of writing, recruit in some decent writers like Steve Coombs, who's a regular reporter for NRN, to write for 1851, all of a sudden we would be able to build a foundation of a publication. Now, I say this in my publisher letter for 1851. I don't know if this is going to be the first and last print issue of 1851. What I do know is there was a demand. A lot of people requested something that they could feel in touch that represented the publication. And as I talk about the opportunity to bridge some of those audiences that no other franchise publication has figured out between supplier and franchisee and franchisor, both perspective on both sides and established on both sides, because that exists, then this thing has to be in evolution. So getting up to the print issue, it was just an evolving process. So we'll see what happens out of this. We're printing 3,000 copies for IFA, and we're probably going to do another 3,000 copy run for IFE in New York. So we'll see what happens. If this actually works to drive quality leads back to the franchisors, if it works to educate prospective franchisees on the do's and don'ts of becoming a franchisee, if it helps bridge the gap between franchisors and franchisees across and then ties it all together with that final silo of suppliers who want to know best practices and what's working and what franchisors are doing it well, then awesome. If it doesn't, we adjust and we are willing to continuously change to get it into a good place.
You know, as I was telling you before the show today, you know, we had Franchise Essentials Media Group, as I said, it's now part of Franchise Foundry, and we have this Franchise Today radio show that I'm proud to say we're in our fourth year, which is really mind-boggling considering the first show. I did it as, you know, hey, this is neat. Podcasting seems neat. Let's give it a try. And I had one listener, and I think I had two people on demand. And, you know, we target roughly about 12,000 to 13,000 franchise executives, not looking to take it, you know, beyond the franchise community because we talk about best practices. And now we get between 500 and 600 live listens every week. And by the Monday following our regular show, we typically have anywhere between 6,000 and 11,000 on-demand listens. And I look back at that, and there's been so many times I've wanted to pull the plug saying, God, this is just an inordinate amount of time that I'm spending. Is it doing any good? Do people really want it? And as I was going through the merger in the fall with Foundry, I didn't have quite as much time to franchise today as I would have liked, and I kind of did a little experiment. First, I started rebroadcasting some shows that were already on demand. It didn't need to be scheduled, and we were still driving approximately 4,000 on-demand listens every week. And then I stopped promoting it, and I said, I'm just going to leave this on autopilot and just see how much on-demand activity we have. And we were still getting 2,000 to 3,000 on-demand listens of shows in general. And, you know, part of my thought process was Franchise Essentials Magazine, again, along the lines of your way of thinking. And it was planned, and we were moving forward, and we went through and released our first digital issue, and I was already committed and had to. But quite frankly, when I saw 1851 come out, I knew right then and there we had to pull the plug. To me, with the amount of time that I had or lack of time that I had, and it really wasn't in the space I wanted to be in, but I saw a need for it. So as I often do, I jump and then look back and say, should I have jumped? But anyway, you convinced me otherwise, and I'm happy to say that, you know, we pulled the plug, and we did not want to move forward once we saw 1851, and that's just not blowing smoke. I mean, this is true. I really admire the publication. I admire the content in here. To me, it's great. The fact that it's there every day, the fact that it's within social media, it's just great all the way around. Kudos to you and your team, because it's not just something thrown up. There's a lot of thought behind this. If anybody has yet to go on at 1851project.com or through Facebook, you got to spend some time on this. There's so much there. I don't even know how you have time during the day to even watch this, because, like I said, it's not a start stop. I mean, this is an involvement every day. There's something new and improved on here that resonates. And again, kudos to you and your staff on that.
I appreciate that.
So, one of the things that I hear, okay, throughout franchising, talking with a lot of franchise people, is the thought process behind this young ones to watch. And as you referenced, and I've referenced plenty of times here before, you know, the good old boy network, and I think every industry has a good old boy network. But it's almost like there are some people saying, you know, that's just these new people coming up. They're trying to find a place. Young ones to watch. What is your whole thought behind this, and where do you see this going and evolving? Because at some day you're not going to be one of the young ones to watch like you are right now.
Well, it serves multi purposes. I'll look at my own career within franchising, and I've been doing this for about 10 years now. So it's not like I'm one of the rookies anymore, and I think we've done a pretty strong job at establishing some pretty solid best practices when it comes to communications. But and you can look at this list, and it's not young ones under 40, and that's done on purpose, and it's almost sad because it's tough to find enough young ones within franchising under the age of 40. It just doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And I'll say part of it is this good old boy network. And I understand maybe someday I am in this network, but I hope that I can keep my mind open to the fact that if we're going to instill best practices in this industry, and if I, and the IFA convention is designed to build the best practices and have open dialogue, then we're going to have to embrace those who might have that next big idea. So I look through my own career, and especially at No Limits, I obviously made a big change from the agency that I came from. I've struggled to find that voice. I have struggled to develop a platform, not because I need a platform for No Limit. I'll say we don't use IFA for new client acquisition. We use it as a chance to interact with our existing clients and to educate our staff about franchising. This year we're bringing 13 people. I would imagine there's probably not another supplier that's bringing 13 people
mm-hmm.
from an organization
mm-hmm.
to IFA. I don't do it for new business. I do it for the fact that I can educate. But I look at the access of opportunity that that I've had, and it hasn't existed. When there's a social media platform at an IFA convention, it's not like I'm on that stage having a voice. And again, it's not because I want new business. It's because I want to help franchisors and suppliers and franchisees really gain valuable knowledge that should impact their business. It was a foundation for everything. So if you look at the young ones to watch, you'll see a good list. There are some that, and it was hard to identify, but we found some that are in their 20s that if franchising gives them a shot and you don't have some supplier who is grumpy that there's another competitor in the field, but if you allow some of these people to have a voice, you can now groom a constant campaign in franchising. Right now, again, the amount of young folks are limiting in franchising and within this community that's built around the IFA. If these guys don't get embraced, then 10 years from now, you're scrambling to find that next good old boy network when the current good old boy network is reaching retirement age. So there's a ton of opportunity to mentor and be associated with and allow people to have voices. And if the franchise community embraces the idea of open knowledge and shared knowledge, then we can influence in positive ways. So Young Ones to Watch is simply saying, here are some up-and-comers. Randy Shaka, who is 34, now the new president of Two Men in a Truck, he should be keynoting something at IFA. And obviously, with 420-some votes on the Young Ones to Watch right now, he has a following. So, but he's not even going to IFA. My point is, you have to embrace the young ones that are coming up, not to say, kid, here's your shot right now. Go be the leader in this organization, or go be the voice of our industry. More so, bring them in so that they can be groomed to take all the knowledge that you learned and all the knowledge that they're going to have to hand off to those coming up behind them so that we can build best practices so the constant conversation at a convention isn't, so what's working in franchising? Nothing's working in franchising because no one's willing to share information and no one's willing to embrace that someone else might have a big idea.
Very, very well said. And, you know, you look at, you know, the younger generation, we'll phrase it at that. I mean, they are today's customers. They are today and tomorrow's franchise candidates. And you're exactly right. Boy, I hate that when I hear, you know, so what's working in franchising today? And it's the same regurgitation of stuff that I've heard 20 years ago. It makes me cringe. It makes me cringe at times. So, and I guess, you know, one of the things that maybe we should we'd talk about is maybe it shouldn't be young ones to watch. Maybe it should be ones to watch because I think there's a lot of us that are in this middle group, and you're closely closing in on that with solid experience in the industry, no longer as one of the young ones to watch just by sheer experience, and certainly not part of the good old boy network, and you're in between. And I like to put myself in that category too, because even at 55 years old, I try to think back and I try to grasp onto, you know, technology and what the millennials are thinking, you know, from a consumer standpoint, from a franchise candidate standpoint. I mean, God, we see time and time again online now, you know, should somebody go for an MBA or just pack that money and invest in a business? I mean, these are real things that are occurring in society today, and it's also going to be one of the big portions of the population moving forward. And if they're not the ones that franchisors are thinking about right now, because of the proliferation and popularity of the internet, they're also big influencers of people that are 55, 60, and 65 years old that may not be able to retire, that may be looking for a second or a third career now as a franchisee. Chances are they're not doing all their due diligence on their own. It's probably these young people that are giving them a lot of help because they're the ones working their way through all the online activity and understand it all and are bringing it to the table. At least that's what I'm seeing. So, again, kudos to you on 1851. I love the tagline on it, brands don't sell stories. We do. Let us tell yours. What do you say to a franchisor, an upstart franchisor that comes to you and says, kind of like standard, you know, I've got no units, I've got just a couple of units, it's a big world out there, how can you help me?
Yeah, and Paul, let me answer that in a second. Let me just address one other thing. I think you're completely right, and I'm glad that you said what you did about the young ones. It should be the ones to watch, because there is a middle category of great minds that don't have the ability to have a voice for X, Y, and Z. So long term, you're right. We need to make sure that we address the middle class of franchising.
Yeah,
and I appreciate
those
comments. That's very powerful comment.
Yeah, to that, thank you. And to that point, I mean, I feel the same way when I hear about whether it be an ethnic group or a minority, you know, a minority, whether it be about women, and they always want to classify it with, the glass ceiling about women and the woman's thing, and there's the National Advancement for Colored People, and all these different groups. It's like, to me, if you really want equality, eliminate those adjectives, those words in front of it that classify you, that you want to be out of this inequality situation and be equal. To me, let's do it based on your experience, your passion, your drive, and your success. And let's not qualify it with something that you're trying to get away from. And I think that's, to me, it doesn't matter whether one of these people are 22 years old, 32 years old, or 82 years old. To classify them based upon that, to me, is wrong. It's look at what they've done and what they bring to the table. And I think that's exactly what you're trying to do here as well.
Yeah, and I appreciate those comments. I actually just wrote it down that, again, 1851 is not a set-in-its-way mentality. It's an evolution of ideas. So that's something that we would happily address in the future.
So the upstart franchisor comes to you and says, Nick, with all you've got going on, I see this. You know, I think I'm too, you know, small for Fox Business News. I don't know if my brand is suitable for 1851 and all that you're doing. How do you respond to them in what must be just an overwhelming position for startup franchisors to be in today?
Yeah, absolutely. If you go back to what No Limits Foundation is, and you hear brands, and getting people to talk about brands, the most important term or word in that entire area is people. The reality is the smallest brand still has a very, very powerful people story behind it. We had a tax preparation client, and I use this as an example all the time, that the guy had one location, and he wanted to be in the Wall Street Journal, and everyone wants the big placement. It wasn't about his tax preparation franchise. It was about the fact that he was willing to get on his bicycle and ride Brooklyn to identify the perfect location while becoming a part of the community and being one with the people. So a startup brand, let me tell you, brands don't sell brands. You think of Dos Equis, a failing beer company, until the most interesting man in the world told us to go drink his beer. No one drank the beer. You think of Dave Thomas. Everyone loved Wendy's. Dave Thomas dies. Wendy's pushes building and product, and sales go down. Now they're reintroducing Wendy. You look at KFC. Every great brand, you can identify a great person behind it, and that's the foundation for why you're going to get press. So a startup brand, it's not about the fact that you created some restaurant or some froyo place. It's about the fact that you took that leap as an entrepreneur and said, I'm going to really roll the dice on every dollar that I saved up and take a risk to make more. That means it doesn't matter if you have one unit or you got 10,000 units. It's still the same story. People sell brands. Brands don't sell brands. People do.
Excellent advice. Excellent words of wisdom there. So looking at this as we're getting to the top of the hour, we're in a special edition of Franchise Today, and our special guest is Nick Powles, CEO of No Limit Agency and founder of 1851 Magazine. Nick, the million-dollar question is, with your crystal ball, silver bullet, magic wand, et cetera, what do you see in the future of franchising from your perspective?
I would hope that people get smarter. I mean, it's somewhat obnoxious for me to say that, and some people are going to say, well, I'm smart. I know what I'm doing. Look, the reality is, if you look at the statistics or the financial numbers behind any franchisor, the typical franchisor is going to have to invest $10,000, maybe between $8,000 and $12,000 per franchisee that comes into their system. So when I hear franchisors tell me, well, we want 50 deals in the next year, that's fantastic. Do you have a $500,000 budget that's going to go towards marketing this opportunity? Well, no, I got $200,000. Then you might have a fighting shot to get 20. So my hope is that in the future, if we can share good information and have open dialogue at some of these franchise events, then eventually we'll build the great model that says, okay, I invest X, I should get this, and if I don't, I don't have the proper sales team, and start building the best practice of how a process works. The portals are gone. They're not going to work anymore. And from what I can see, they're unwilling to evolve. Could something like an 1851 replace it? Absolutely. But time is only going to provide that answer, whether 1851 is the solution. Will it be a silver bullet? No, absolutely not. It's going to be a part of the puzzle that connects great communication back to the prospect and allows the prospect to perform strong due diligence on their own without feeling some pressure of some aggressive sales process. This is a relationship-building industry. We're willing to build relationships with our process and with our franchisees, then our franchisees become multi-unit franchisees and we don't have to work as hard. We can grow from within, which is such an amazing idea that seems to be failed so many times. Why go and try to get a big buffalo when you can create the buffaloes within your own organization? So long term, nothing's going to happen that's going to be magical. I can promise you that the remarkable moments don't exist because it's too crowded, there's too many franchisors, and everyone thinks that owning a restaurant is sexy when it's probably not going to make you money unless you own three of them. So with all those perceptions being realities, nothing's going to change drastically, but hopefully a little bit of change and evolution in the way that we think and share information as an industry, especially at some of these old boys start retiring and getting out of the way. Maybe there's a fighting chance that franchising turns things around in the way that we look at development and how that ties back to all the silos of marketing and communications.
Very well said, and I agree. Definitely franchising is about relationships, and as I say to some franchisors, because I often hear, well, we treat franchisees like family, and I say, well, then I really don't want to be part of that family. it's about relationships, and we do have to evolve. Nick, I really appreciate the time you spent with us today. Look for 1851 magazine in print at the IFA convention. I look forward to seeing you and your team, and I'll tell you, you're right. I don't know of anybody bringing as many people to IFA as you are. Again, that just shows your commitment to your company and your team. I mean, that to me is a tremendous message to your team, willing to bring them with you. Too many times I hear, oh, we're just, you know, just bringing, you know, or just myself is going, maybe one other person, and not extending it to the team. That's a tremendous message you're sending to your team and to others in the industry as well. And I look forward to seeing you there.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing you there too, Paul.
On Thursday, we have Steve Caldera, President and CEO of the IFA, and as we continue the voices of franchising. And until then, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is out.